I got a couple of readings I want to start off with this morning. The first is our scripture reading. It comes from the book of Acts, chapter 10. It's going to be, I could list the verses out, but just a selection of verses so that we can tell the story well without it going on for 20 minutes. So hear now these words from Acts. About noon the next day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up to the rooftop to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat, and while it was being prepared, he fell into a trance, and he saw the heaven open and something like a large sheet coming down, being lowered to the ground by its four corners. And in it were all kinds of four-footed creatures and reptiles and birds of the air. Then he heard a voice saying, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "By no means, Lord. I have never eaten anything that is profane or unclean." The voice said to him again, a second time, "What God has made clean, you must not call profane." This happened three times, and the thing was suddenly taken up into heaven. And on Peter's arrival, Cornelius met him, and falling at his feet, worshipped him. But Peter made him get up, saying, "Stand up. I am only a mortal." And as he talked with him, he went in and found that many had assembled. And he said to them, "You yourselves know that it is unlawful for a Jew to associate and visit with a Gentile. But God has shown me that I should not call anyone profane or unclean." Then Peter began to speak to them, "I truly understand that God shows no partiality. But in every people, anyone who fears him and practices righteousness is acceptable to him." May we add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. I also want to read an excerpt from a book by a gentleman by the name of Ibu Patel. He's the founder of the Interfaith America organization, and his book is entitled "Acts of Faith: The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation." And in it, he has this to say: "We are taught that the line between the faithful and the heretic is sharp and fixed, drawn once and for all in ink, and cannot be erased. But I have learned that the line moves, it bends, it disappears when the stranger becomes a neighbor. I have seen that what we call clean or unclean, or insider or outsider, often says more about our fear than about our God. And I believe that the Creator weaves the human family out of differences, threads of every color and texture and faith, so that we cannot be whole until we are willing to be woven together."
You know, my son visited, he was in Europe and he had an Airbnb in London and discovered that he's always talking about the cultural differences between the UK and the United States, Europe in general. But one thing that he said was very stark that he noticed is that the UK is more secular than religious. That the worshiping religious communities are definitely the minority. Which is definitely opposite in the United States. This song was written in 1986, and I've done this at least once here. I don't know that in 1986 an American songwriter would have the guts to actually write this song. If you hear it, it's the child who sings at the very beginning and the very end of it.
Thank you. hope you got the letter in. I pray you can make it better down here. I don't need a big reduction in the price of beer. But all the people you make in your image, they're starving on their feet, 'cause they don't get enough to eat from God. I can't believe it. Dear God, sorry to disturb you, but I feel like the deeper life. We don't need a big reduction in the amount of tears. All the people that you made in your image, see them fighting on the street, 'cause they can't make a thing in its speed about God. I can't believe it.
Reflection period, just kind of take it in and think about what we have been talking about. And also, a little bit later in the service, we'll give everyone the opportunity to respond to our theme of our message today or ask questions so that we can get a little feedback and have other perspectives added to this. We are continuing. We're almost finished with the summer sermon series that's based on a book that I believe is probably going to be published in the spring, it looks like. It's called The Sacred Undoing, Faith Beyond the BS. Today's sermon is entitled, The Sacred Isn't That Picky. So let's be honest. Religion has a bad habit of acting like a picky eater. The one who sort of sits down at a perfectly good buffet and says, oh, no, I only eat certain kinds of food. Only eat the right kind of food, made the right way, and with the right seasoning, and blessed by all the right people. And I have to say, if the sacred is like that, we are all in trouble. But here's the good news. The sacred just isn't all that picky. See, we like to imagine God with a clipboard and a checklist, measuring the hymn lengths and taking notes of doctrinal purity and making sure we're following all of the unspoken dress codes for the faithful. And somewhere along the lines, we confuse the creator of the universe with sort of a mall cop at a Jesus-themed country club. And that's not just bad theology, that's sort of small theology. It shrinks the sacred down to our size, to our comfort zones, to our little club of people who think and live like we do. And the thing is, Jesus had a way of blowing that kind of thinking wide open. His tables were crowded. His guest list was suspiciously inclusive. And his RSVP policy was basically, if you're breathing, you're in. That's why the religious gatekeepers of his day were always grumbling at him. The people that they were working so hard to exclude kept winding up at his tables. One of the most persistent lies that the church tells us is this: the sacred is only present with the right kind of people in the right kind of spaces practicing the right kind of religion. It's a lie that, well, it shows up in different disguises. Sometimes it's wrapped in denominational arrogance. We are the true church. The others are just misguided. Sometimes it's dressed in theological purity tests. You have to believe this exact list of doctrine in order to really belong. And sometimes it's disguised as cultural gatekeeping. Your kind of people don't worship here. You know, this thinking just doesn't draw lines. It digs basically moats. And then it hands out binoculars so that we can look across the water and congratulate ourselves being on the right side. Those of us who identify as progressive Christians, we can't afford to ignore this. Because the moment we stop confronting this kind of thinking, it grows. It grows in our neighbor's pews, in our nation's politics, and sometimes even in our own hearts. And every time it grows, it pushes more people away from the very love that we claim that we are following. That's not harmless preferences there. It's not just the way tradition thing goes. It's dangerous dogma is what it is. It shrinks the sacred down to a clubhouse deity who hands out membership cards to the people who are approved. And once you start believing that the sacred is that picky, it's not long before you start thinking that you have divine permission to be just as picky in your love, in your compassion, and in your justice. But here's the thing. The Bible tells a very different story. Again and again, we find the sacred showing up where the gatekeepers said it shouldn't be. In the wrong towns, at the wrong tables, among the wrong people. And Jesus didn't just tolerate that. He went out of his way to make sure those kinds of things happened. If you ever needed proof that the sacred refuses to play by our in and out rules, just look at our reading today from Acts 10. Peter, the same Peter who walked with Jesus, the same Peter who heard him say, "Love your neighbors more times than you can count," is still at the point at the beginning of this story, clinging to a purity system that divides the world into clean and unclean. Then comes this dream. A big sheep. A big sheep drops out of heaven filled with animals. Peter's been told his whole life that these particular animals are off limits. And a voice, God's voice, says, "Get up, kill, eat." So Peter, pushes back. He says, "Nope, absolutely not. I'm not going to do it. I have never eaten anything profane or unclean before. I'm not going to start now." And the voice answers, "What God has made clean, you shouldn't be calling profane." Peter wakes up, still probably scratching his head trying to figure it out. And then right then, as if on cue, a group of Gentiles show up at his door, sent by a Roman centurion named Cornelius. And you have to remember, Cornelius is as wrong as it gets in Peter's old world view. He was the wrong ethnicity, he was the wrong religion, he wore the wrong uniform, everything about him was wrong. And yet, as the story is told, God had been working in Cornelius' life all along. So by the end of the chapter, Peter has this sort of massive light bulb moment. He says, I truly do understand that God shows no partiality, but in every nation, anyone who fears him and does what is right is acceptable. No partiality. No borders on grace. No members only table in the kingdom. And here's the thing. Peter didn't just stumble into this realization. He had to sort of be pushed into it by none other than God. Because our human tendency is always to sort of shrink the sacred into something that we can control and understand and hold on to. We build walls around God to make God manageable. Then we start mistaking those walls for God. Acts 10 is pretty much a direct challenge to that human instinct. It's God's way of saying, I am not bound by your categories. I am not limited by your labels. If you're going to follow me, you better get used to coloring outside of the lines. See, Peter's problem wasn't just that he misunderstood dietary laws. That wasn't the problem. His problem was that he confused God's voice with his culture's voice. And then he baptized that cultural bias as if it had come straight from heaven. Does that sound familiar? Because it should. If you ask me, modern Christianity has practically turned that movement to an Olympic sport. We've got churches declaring that only certain people can lead worship because of who they love. We've got whole denominations that are debating whether or not women can preach as if God of all people is somehow also gender selective. We've got gatekeepers who will literally spend hours policing people's pronouns, but won't spend a minute visiting with someone living on the streets. It's the same pattern that Peter fell into. Drawing lines around sacred. Lines that the sacred never drew. And if we're being honest, those lines have less to do with holiness and a whole lot more to do with holding on to God. And then Acts 10, it kind of explodes all of that. It reminds us that God doesn't wait for church boards to vote before showing up in people's lives. God doesn't wait for denominational polity to be updated. God doesn't even wait for the right person to say the right thing at the right time. And you see, that's dangerous news if you've built your entire identity around being a gatekeeper. But for the rest of us, it's actually incredibly freeing, or at least it should be. It means that we can quit wasting time defending imaginary boundaries and start joining the sacred in the wild work of love and of inclusion. If the sacred isn't all that picky, then we've got some unlearning to do. Because most of us were handed a faith that came with a very clear map. These are the insiders, those are the outsiders, here's the approved path, and over there is where you'll fall into the pit of doom if you wander away too far. We were taught to keep in our lane, to keep our head down, and to keep the rules. As if faith were a cosmic game of Mother May I, with God waiting to send us back to the first starting place if we make a misstep. But today's reading challenges all of that, changes all of that. It says, the people you wrote off, those people, they're already in the family. God has been on the move in places that you did not think counted. When you really believe that, when you believe that, it changes how you show up in the world. You start looking for the image of God in people before you look to put labels on them. You stop obsessing over whether people meet your checklist, and you start wondering how you can join the work of love that they're already doing. You quit trying to be the bouncer at the gates of heaven and start acting like the welcoming team. This isn't some anything goes free for all. It's a call to take love so seriously. Take love so seriously that you refuse to let some small-mindedness of religion control you to win. It's a commitment to even follow God into uncomfortable, inconvenient, and unpredictable places. Because that's where the sacred has always been the most at home. If the sacred isn't that picky, then I'd say neither should we be. We don't get to pick and choose who's worthy of dignity. We don't get to filter out the inconvenient people from our compassion. We don't get to pretend that the kingdom of God has an admissions department with our name on the door. And if that means our faith gets a little messy, well then so be it. If that means we get accused of watering it down or compromising truth, well so be it. Because the truth is this. When Jesus tore the curtain in the temple, he wasn't making a symbolic statement. He was letting the right kind of people in. He was saying, everybody is in. The wall is gone. You can stop guarding that door now. They are all admitted. And that's not some kind of a theological footnote. That is a direct challenge. A direct challenge to the way religion still operates today. This is where we find our prophetic voice. This is where we stop playing along with the smallest exclusions and start declaring the bigness of love's welcome. This is where we walk into the uncomfortable, the inconvenient, the unpredictable place and plant our feet, because that's exactly where the Spirit is already at work. And if people ask why we're there, why we're standing with folks that they say don't believe, well, we can tell them the truth. Because the sacred isn't that picky. That's why. And neither is love. So go. Go now. Go where the gates are locked and where the signs say keep out. Go where the lines have been drawn and the walls have been built. Go where the hurt is raw and the welcome is thin. Go where the stories are silenced and the tables are small. And when you get there, open the gates. Cross the lines. Tear down the walls. Set a bigger table. Discover new dimensions of God. Because the sacred isn't that picky. And neither is love. And when love moves in, no one is left out. No one is sent away. No one is forgotten. Let it be so. Let us be so. And let us get to work.
that's leading me to the place where I find peace again.
Heads together, and I invite you to receive this as a prayer or as a meditation, or again, just an opportunity to hold on to the words and the phrases that you need in this moment. Let's bow our heads together. The sacred has always been in the business of crossing lines we once thought were fixed, breaking open the fences built for control, setting tables in places declared off limits. May we be moved to see the wideness of welcome in every face encountered. May we be reminded that the sacred does not require paperwork before offering embrace. May we learn to love without measure, without borders, without fear of who sits beside us. In a world addicted to sorting and separating, may we take up the holy work of mixing and mingling, of listening and learning, of staying at the table, even when the conversation stretches us. Love is not picky. It pours into every corner, spills over the edges of every map, and refuses to be contained by our rules. May we follow where love leads. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and your actions share that love and happiness with all of those you meet.
Here's a song by a Christian band that sounds like a rock band.
Why have we become so?